Well, we're just having a time in here. We're trying to get it all together, is it? So just excuse us. Don't mind us. We won't bother you. This is a Weekend Gardener, or some semblance thereof, this morning, as we are playing and playing and playing, just like we're in a sand pile, right?
I think more like a hog pen.
Well, when I play
that was
golf,
last week.
When I play golf, I stay in a sand pile.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Right. That's right. Well,
I'm getting pretty good at hitting out of those tracks.
Are you? My problem is I try to hit the ball too hard, and I end up in the darndest places. Not holes in trees, and there's all kinds. So. It feels really nice out there this morning, comparatively speaking.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's not harsh wind or anything like that. It's been really cold this week in the mornings and certainly warmed up quickly yesterday and supposed to be about the same today, about 55 or so. So very pleasant. So enjoy it because tomorrow, I think, brings rain. Is that correct?
Well, I hope so since I planted about 50 bulbs yesterday, and over the night, my dear little squirrel friends dug them up. Now, I am furious. I'm going to go back and replant them, and I'm
going to put some I Must Garden squirrel repellent
in
there.
I've got some squirt I Must Garden.
Get your Red Ryder ready.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. But anyway.
So,
I've never had that happen before.
What kind of?
There were tulips and daffodils, about 50 each.
We planted about 400, and I left the farm, the next day or a couple days later, and Mom said, "You probably won't like this, but I think the squirrels dug everything up." I'm like, no. But I'm excited for the anticipation. I know there'll be plenty to come up, so I'm excited for
that. You got to get back out there and get into the ground that they dug up.
Well, yeah. A little late, but...
I have noticed that a daffodil will, even on the top of the ground, do something.
It will.
It's not too late to plant bulbs if you've had some warming or cooling.
With all the cold we're having, can get them down in the ground, I think you're in good shape. January's okay. I mean, we like to think, well, let's get them in the ground late November, December, but we're a little past mid-January. I think you're fine to go ahead and plant.
Is that a squirrel going after
probably
out at your farm? That's from an app on your phone, right?
Yes. That's probably my mother's cat Nosy wanting to get in.
He's Nosy.
He is a farm patrol by night and a day cat. He just sleeps all day long inside.
Yeah. Oh, so he's trying to get in the house, go to sleep.
Yeah, it's time for his bedtime.
Well, I have another friend that I have discovered. I have a drum for my waste disposal.
Not like Ringo Starr.
No.
It's like Bongo. Yeah.
And you turn it, and it's got a top on it that you pull back to put your garbage in.
Okay.
And so for the past 2 weeks, I have found it turned over and the lid pulled back so that the...
Raccoonies.
Raccoonie, I saw him. He's as big as a big Newfoundland pup. And he knows how to turn that thing over on its backside.
So is this like a composter or something?
Yeah, a composter.
Oh, okay.
And he can even pull the lid all the way out so it dumps in the ground. He gets what he wants. But I saw him the other day.
He's need to teach him to put the lid back on it.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, if you're going to use it, put the lid back on, please.
No manners.
Yeah.
Well, so what are you going to do?
I'm going just to humor him.
Duct tape it.
Yeah, but...
He'll get that off,
Oh, he'll
too.
Take that
yeah,
off.
Yeah.
He'll take that off.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch squirrels and their
clever
acrobatics and tenacity in trying to get into things.
I love to watch them get a hold of some Cole's Red Hot Pepper. It just goes right to their ears, and they just go berserk. It's hilarious.
Never seen them move faster, right?
Oh, my goodness.
I like to catch them and put it down their throat.
Wait a minute now. Let's just back off.
It's a family show, Rufus.
That's right. Let's not get hostile. We were talking about raccoons anyway.
I have
anyway.
A friend, my person who helps me in my book, Nancy Carter Moore. She has pet squirrels that for rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all these little amenities, trapezes, and this and that. And every time she hears me saying something ugly about a squirrel,
mm-hmm.
she thinks it's an attack on the most wonderful thing in the world. Now, if squirrels will stay in their place, quit digging up my bulbs, I'll live with them. But you got to live with them. But they're not my favorite mammal.
Okay. I have a guy who's been doing some... work on our beach house, and I remember a couple years ago he was working over at my cousin's house, and he was showing me his pet squirrel. His pet squirrel would ride around on his shoulder, and you know, he had it for, I don't know, a year or something like that, and the squirrel would run off and then run back and jump on his anyway, the squirrel pretty much got run over, but anyway, I kind of had forgotten about it, and so my good friend who lives down there was having some squirrel issues, chewing her soffit up and her shingles, and so I said, well, let's call my buddy and get him out there. So we called him out there, and he couldn't do it, and I forgot, and it later dawned on me, so I have to tell my friend that.
Oh, absolutely.
How about that?
Pet squirrels.
Well, we've now discussed all the problems of the world, at least in the landscape.
But we did say that it's not too late to... plant bulbs, you'll go ahead and get them out.
Well, I think I'd rather have squirrels digging them up than voles sucking them down.
Amen.
So,
I'll go with that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously there's clever remedies for both and probably a place in life for both. But nothing renews you more than seeing the bulbs that you've planted, your you know, reaping your love of labor when the spring comes and those beautiful flowers pop up and the fragrances. So that's what I'm looking forward
Amen.
To.
Amen. Well, I love to think, this sounds awful, but I love to forget where I planted certain things. And then
the surprise.
You get a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably not too hard in your yard.
And getting in my older years, I want more beauty around me.
Yeah,
I
you
want more bulbs.
Such a fun garden. I wish we could have more than one garden party because there's just so many
nooks and crannies.
Yeah. And the vision that you have had is just—it's just joyous because there's
vision,
art.
The vision was—is there a square foot that doesn't have something in it?
It's kind of like some parts are kind of like the Secret Garden, though.
Yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, it is. Kind of like a savanna garden.
It's got a bog too.
Well, I just Palmer and I just dug up a large size St. John's wort.
Okay.
That was in a rock garden, and I want to save that for a perennial garden or a perennial spot. And I'm assuming they like a lot of sun, Nelsa, because I had it in sun. But I'd like to put it in a place where there's somewhat shade. Am I okay if I can get 4 or 5 hours of sun a day?
Absolutely. Yeah, St. John's wort will definitely do great in a good bit of shade. I mean, if you get 3-4 hours of sunlight, those flower buds are gonna stretch. But you know, I consider it somewhat of a shade plant. I mean,
okay,
you could
good.
Do full sun, but
good.
Yeah, absolutely. You just cut it back. Have you cut it back?
I cut it back to dig it
obviously
out.
Obviously, it's deciduous.
Yeah,
but yeah.
It was about 5 feet tall.
Yeah, and
that may even
help it rejuvenate or regenerate a good bloom set.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things, a lot of plants that can take a lot more shade than you might think.
Yeah.
Although you might, in some cases, sacrifice some blooming.
Yeah, and or the blooms may come a little bit later than, say, you know, I've been in so many neighborhoods where, you know, the right side has a tree or it's on the north side, and then, you know, the left side, they're like, well, the left side always blooms beautiful. And, I'm, you know, it's funny, there was this one spot I worked with, a huge white oak. It finally has been cut down, I think, because it had become hollowed and kind of a dangerous, and it was right off of Sunset Lake Road. So now they're going to have pretty much equal sun for whatever they put. But, you know, they wanted to have a really pristine entrance, so they were going for a white against a brick background. And so I'm like, all right, we're going to do some white azaleas on the shade side, but they don't match on this side, you know. So, we were doing some white dwarf viburnums on the left. And so anyway, you know, it is interesting to see how you can have, you know, three plants in a row and two of them do great and one of them, you know, is just altered slightly, either because it's root bound or maybe just, you know, hits a dry pocket, doesn't get as much water or doesn't get as much sunlight. But that's part of the puzzle to figuring out your landscape, is studying your landscape.
Yeah. Well, I after almost 50 years there, I've done a lot of experimenting, and some things don't work, move on to something else.
Yeah.
And I appreciate what you said about the garden, because I don't like real bona fide landscape architects to come. Because they look at it too much. Well, why do you have a tall plant in front of a short one? Well, you can always look around the tall plant.
Well, that may not even be an architect. That may just be a mow and blow.
Yeah, I don't know. It's your yard. You do what you want to do.
That's true.
You're listening to The Weekend Gardener on WPTF. We're just playing here. Hope you'll join us. It's 8:19 WPTF time. More coming up. All righty, we're back on WPTF. News coming up here and with Mr. Rigsby and CBS, and we'll have the weather for you. Speaking of the weather, it's been chilly this week. I keep hearing anchors on the news say, bring your plants inside. Well, you should have done that months ago, I hope. Hope
yes,
you don't
sir.
Have anything sitting outside. What you do have is should be acclimatized.
Correct.
If you didn't buy something that was tropical and just hope that it was going to survive, everybody's not Tony Avid. Everybody can't will a plant to survive here. So
but I think it's going to be great to have this deep cold, and hopefully it'll, you know,
some take insects.
Take care of some of our nemesis pest. And so I'm excited for it, but I'm excited for it to warm up too. So.
Yeah. Well, you go into the beach a lot. You talking about a cold place in the winter is our Atlantic coast.
Woo-wee, get that wind behind you.
Yeah. That's okay, though. Beach is the beach.
That's right. But I think, cold shock, basically cold shock therapy for plants is good, and just makes them the tougher. So I think whatever weather we get, we'll deal with it. And, you know, and it's always interesting, as you were speaking of our beloved coast, you know, lots of camellias that are flowering. I have lots of camellias flowering in my yard. And Rufus, I think I did the show with you at least once a month, but you've been bringing and talking about some camellias blooming in your yard. My yard's full of them, and people worry about it, and you'll see them go cover it. But there are always so many tight buds and recessed buds that we will just continue to be blessed with color all through winter and spring.
Well, some people got, I had someone the other day say, I think I've lost my crop. My buds have turned brown. I said, look, that's very natural. And I looked at it. It was a Professor Sargent. I said, you're fine. You're going to get it.
Yeah. I mean, there are secondary blooms. Anne used to talk about that.
Yes, yes, yeah.
I mean, that's a very resilient plant.
Now, I have noticed this, Nels. I think that white ones don't quite last as long. And I think that's because they start turning that rust
dingy
color.
Mm-hmm.
But I love them.
I think it just depends on, you know, their bloom time. You know, if we just have like a lush, you know, kind of early spring, if you will, you won't even remember that they had been phased by that dingy color.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I think they're really cool. But it's interesting. There used to be this, and it's probably still there, but back in my Fairview days, there was this very large Camellia japonica. And it was pretty fat. I would say it was probably 6, 7, 8 feet across and maybe 7, 8 feet tall. And it was just kind of a single plant by itself. And right there on Holly Springs Road, a couple miles down, in between Campbell Road Nursery and Fairview. And it was a spot where it got full sun. And I always loved to watch that plant in the wintertime because on the south side of the plant, it was a very yellow-like foliage. Like, it was almost like someone had divided the plant in half. So on half of the side, it was very yellowed. And on the north side, it was very lush and green. And then the blooms were always more vigorous on the north side and pretty than the ones on the kind of the east, the southeast side. They would tend to burn more or turn that dingy color. So that's a result of, you know, the freezing temperatures. You know, we get some pretty days. We were talking about it was, you know, the last two or three days. Cold in the morning, but warming up to 55. So those buds will open up and your flowers will crack and start blooming. And then we're going to get this severe blast. Well, the buds on the north side that aren't flowering now are going to stay tight.
Yeah.
And even if they do have some color, they're still going to stay tight. But the ones on that southeast side, the sun is going to come up with that 20-degree weather, and it's going to burn them. So it singes them. So there is some thought process, even though we're saying they're resilient, but there is some thought to preserving or having a longer bloom cycle with certain, you know, certain plants.
Well, I've noticed this year, The line of demarcation of Cisanqua japonica, there's no line there now. It's just,
no, they
doesn't
just
seem
they
like
just
it.
Yeah,
he's over there.
They do. Yeah. They just go and go and go, which is good because we pretty much start having color from, you know, September all the way through and even early April.
Well, by the way, again, I know that how did Professor Sargent get his name?
I don't know.
You said one time, Mike, I don't remember.
I don't either.
That's an old one, though, so I think that one
dates
back to the 18.
Yeah, it could be Professor Sargent, somebody.
Yeah.
We'll check it out.
Yeah.
Coming up during the break here on WPTF, on The Weekend Gardener. All righty, 8:33, Mike Raley here, along with Rufus Edmonston and Nelsa Cox, and I think that's the first time I've said that this morning. Excuse
me. Good morning.
Well, I mean, we're just buddies, and I just figure buddy knows who you are anyway. So, you looked up what the counselor was asking for, the information about Professor Sargent. Who was Professor Sargent, and why was that plant named that?
Let's see if I can.
Would you go back to it? I was. a reverend named somebody Arnold Arboretum in Boston.
Yeah, so it was the Reverend John Drayton who named the Professor Sergeant Camellia in 1925 to honor Charles Sprague Sargent, who was the director of the Arnold Arboretum. Y'all write that in your book so we don't have to look it up.
Have either of y'all been to the Arnold Arboretum?
I have. It's been quite some time.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. We're taking a trip to Gloucester for the Bulb Festival this year, Mom and I. So
it's Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Gloucester is on, is in the eastern, it's out toward Williamsburg, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. Exactly. It's before Williamsburg, but it's not not too far past Richmond to the east. Yeah.
Well, that being the bulb blooming season that you go?
Yeah, Gloucester. Well, Brent and Becky Heath, who have an amazing bulb farm, I believe they were pretty much the instrumental ones who started having these bulbs that were left over and just planting and planting. And so the Gloucester town became just overpopulated, not overpopulated, but populated and beautiful, and just became a destination. So that they have this bulb festival there, and it's national now. Amazing. So
can that be a one-day trip?
It's possible. It's possible.
All right, give me the date because you got me excited.
It's I can tell you exactly. Let's see here. Get my calendar.
G L O
U S T E R Gloucester. So the dates of that, it's basically Saturday and Sunday, the first Saturday and Sunday in April. It's April 5th and 6th. So Mom and I just like decided we would stay in a scenic area. So we're going to be about 12, 14 miles away at this little lake, staying in a tiny house.
Ah,
it's a tiny little house. Can you get in there okay? can you and your mother both get in there?
You gotta get off.
No, push her up in there.
Get all four.
We're not taking the chicken. We're not taking the chickens.
Get on all fours now and crawl in there, and be sure and back out backwards.
Okay. But I'm looking forward to it because there'd be some nice.
That sounds like habitat. A wonderful road trip. There's so many interesting places near us that we don't go. We just kind of hang around and yeah.
This might be my year of the festivals. I need to hit up festivals.
Oh, yeah. That's a little idea that you might think about. Has anybody done a book, Nelson, on all the public gardens in North Carolina? That'd be a great thing
I
for you to do.
I feel like Toby Boast may have represented something along those lines. Maybe.
Well, if he did, I don't have it. I don't have it. I got
maybe,
all his
I may
books,
be wrong.
I thought.
Yeah, I may be wrong.
I think I would have it, too.
Yeah, I may be wrong. But
have you seen Toby lately?
No, it's been a good
I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah, been a minute. But
I reckon he's still in Winston-Salem area.
Probably. But I would love to do, like, I don't know, not every weekend, but just pick some festivals throughout North Carolina. There's one that I tried to make it to last year. It didn't work out. And the name is escaping me, but Rufus and Mike, I know you will know, but the cantaloupe that comes from a very specific area.
Our friends with the...
it's north of here.
Yeah.
Not Candor. What is it?
Big John and our friends.
He's got a roadside stand. Blah, blah, blah.
Craig Willard is our proponent.
Oh, you're talking about up in Norlina.
Yeah.
Norlina. What is the name of that
the
cantaloupe?
The cantaloupe, dead gummit. Yeah. We talked about this a couple
several,
of weeks ago.
Several times we've talked
Ridgeway.
Ridgeway.
Thank goodness.
No, is it,
thank you, Lord. I can remember that.
Yeah.
That's a delicacy. And they have a festival there.
That's what I'm talking about. I want to go to festivals.
Right off of 85.
Yeah, Ridgeway cantaloupe.
Got Blueberry Festival that I used to go to when I was in office. And one time I was driven down there by my friend Arthur Williamson, and I was in the back seat of the car, and he decided to load it up, and the only thing showing was my head among all the packages of blueberries on the way back to Raleigh. He had to unload part of them to get me out of the back.
Well, that should have been on the front page of the News and Observer the next day.
If they had seen it, it would have been. By the way, You know, last week, I came up with a word, and that was provenance.
Well, we moved away from eleemosynary and on to what?
Provenance.
Provenance. And
now, today we're going to do ubiquitous.
That means common, doesn't it?
That means everywhere.
Oh, I have one after we get off the air for you.
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous.
This is for you, Richard. Ubiquitous. Flies are ubiquitous around a barn.
Airware. We say airware.
Has everybody got their chalk and tablet out this morning?
Barbecue joints are ubiquitous to North Carolina. Well, they're everywhere.
We started with eleemosynary. Would you tell Nelsa what eleemosynary is?
That is a legal term, but it means of a charitable nature. If you are a eleemosynary-minded person, you're very giving.
Well, thank you.
And provenance?
Provenance. Okay, you go pick out an antique, and somebody says, well, what's its history? That means, what's its provenance?
How about that?
I'd like that with plants, too.
And that applies to plants.
Yes, it does.
Very specifically, provenance.
Well, we're not being ubiquitous. We're going somewhere, not everywhere. Coming up here on The Weekend Gardener. Okay, we're back, class. Everybody behave. So, I was looking at, I haven't been to Gloucester, and it's really not that far from Williamsburg, because we usually, Melissa and I drive on the old road that, I forget what it's called, Colonial Parkway, that goes between Williamsburg and Yorktown. It's a very pretty drive over there. We go to Yorktown and turn around and go back. But if you go to Yorktown and then get on 17, the 17 that runs through North Carolina, then that takes you straight to Gloucester.
Okay. I remember one time, this was back in the college days, I took 17 from Virginia Beach all the way to Myrtle Beach. I think it took all day.
I'll tell
like
you.
12 hours or something.
Melissa and I did that. We were on our honeymoon in Williamsburg.
Okay.
And we drove to part was there and part was at Topsail. So we drove to Topsail from Williamsburg, went through the dismal swamp and.
It was stunning, but.
Woo. Yeah, I mean, it was. Yeah.
Well, was that the first or second time that you two got married?
That was the second time. That was the official, not the time we eloped and didn't tell anybody, except a couple of people. Who kept it secret? We all kept it secret.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And our 50th wedding anniversary is coming up from that elopement.
Yeah, I figured.
This year.
I figured after we do the Gloucester tour, I'll just run Mom on up to Busch Gardens and put her on a few roller coasters.
Does she like roller coasters?
She does not.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really not very nice.
I don't either.
So how were you planning to get up there, drive up there? What route were you taking?
I don't know. We'll be leaving from the farm, so probably.
You better figure out some
way. Well, we'll probably take 85 north, cross up through 95 Richmond, and then come back more of a scenic route. I'm like a directional person. I like to get there. I don't want to be late. And then I relax, and I like to do all the scenic and scenery and that type of thing.
There's a lot of it up there.
Play it by ear. Oh, yeah. I do adore Williamsburg. I mean,
I do, too. I've been going there since the late 50s.
Well, I like to mess around getting somewhere.
But it takes you a long time to get somewhere?
Yeah, I like to mess around. And when I go to Williamsburg, I want to go up there where I take that ferry.
Oh yeah, that's the way we go. We go up to go up, drive, take 95 up to Stony Creek, and then drive over to Waverly and Spring Garden and Surrey.
I'm sure there'll be lots of garden center stops. That's another thing that we'll do. Yeah,
isn't the oldest oldest? They say one of the oldest homes in America is the Surrey, where it sits there, that antique home. old home.
There's a very old courthouse there, and that's about the only thing there is in Surrey is the courthouse. And then you drive about 5 miles, and you you get to the ferry, and that's a nice experience.
Maybe we'll do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's very easy. 95 to Stony Creek, and I forget the – I can give you a route
I
for
might
that.
Have to get you to do that.
Yeah, I'd be glad to.
Thank you.
Because we –
Well, why don't you just drive them?
Yeah.
You're a driver.
How
he
much,
likes to drive.
How much do you pay?
It's negotiable.
Okay. No, that would be fun. That would be really
He'll
fun.
Get you lost.
You can stay
I
in the tiny.
That is not true.
You can He'll stay in the tiny lost. House. And he sleeps four.
He's just jumping on me for this.
Did you hear about the latest trip again?
I did.
Chevrolet?
I did.
Ad nauseum.
Oh man, his I call it Shirley. His Siri must have been on a drunk that morning. Because whoever she was, she took us all circle the block three or four times.
It was Google,
and then we circled another yeah. block.
But I think it ended
up in Mebane.
I think it ended. No, we didn't end up that far.
We
ended
Mebane.
Up in Eflin. No, we didn't.
Oh, Eflin.
We went
okay.
to Eflin. Well, went through Cedar Ridge.
Eflin.
Eflin is where Melissa and I met. I mean, just a few miles from there at Camp Chestnut Ridge. So it's a very sacred place to me.
Absolutely. It was destined that you
were drawn.
That your Siri Shirley take you that way.
But it was beautiful country out there. We had been to a remote, help a friend out in Roxboro, Dave Bradshaw. Mm-hmm. And so we in Timberlake.
Okay.
At the Brooks Brothers store. they don't sell a lot of clothing, but this branch of the Brooks Brothers.
And then we proceeded to go have lunch at Hurricane Mills.
Okay.
Yeah, which was delicious.
And that's where all the trouble always starts.
It did both times.
Either getting there or leaving there.
First time it was because we got several different directions, and I didn't use a GPS that time. And we
ended up in Guest Road and headed to Durham.
Yeah, we found out where the end of Guest Road is. So, but the second time,
is that near
I think
Hillsboro?
We don't know. It's somewhere. It may be Person County. But at any rate, the second time, it kind of cried out this this Google Maps lady, and it said I've lost telemetry or whatever. It lost the Wi-Fi or you know the cell. Thing. So I think that messed it up, and it was trying to get us somewhere, but it wasn't trying to get us to Rufus's house or the farmer's market area at that point. Well, so we had to reconnoiter. I'll never hear the end of it.
I was showing Mom how to use that, and so she and her cousin left the Julian area, headed to Oak Island, and she likes to go her way, which I think is great, but she thought, well, I'm going to impress my younger cousin, who is also in his 80s, and said, you know, she says, Siri, directions to Oak Island, and Siri says, you know, getting directions to Okawa, Florida. So she does not understand Southern, and so then she couldn't figure out how to make it stop. And so once they got past 95, it's like rerouting, turn around, rerouting, turn around. And they listened to it for 2 hours. I'd have had to have shot myself, but they finally pulled over and called me.
Well, you would have been very disturbed on this trip then, although the scenery is just extraordinary in person in Orange County.
Hey, that's something we love. Do love me some scenery.
I know. So that's what we were doing. But Mr. Important over here had an engagement with a nap, although you could have slept.
Well, it was a good drive.
It's hard to be the driver and the navigator. So you know what I'm saying?
He was neither.
Well, he can only be one or the other.
I take that back about suggesting he drive you up there. Why don't you just make it on your own? Because Michael will get
Lord.
On. He'll get off there somewhere. But he's a safe driver. He doesn't
tailgate. I do lose track sometimes. you've missed the exit.
I've seen him blaze by me.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, this is very appropriate from our Cliff Joyner saying of the day. You may be disappointed if you fail, but you are doomed if you don't try.
Always trying.
So come on. Yeah.
Well, I think I've
that's
been
a good saying there.
I've tried. Yeah, I tried. Try is a big part of it. I'll tell you that. Was this all of these words, Ely, Mosinary, Provenance, ubiquitous, are they from the Cliff Joyner primer, word primer?
No, I just sit around and think of something that I think that almost everybody knows, but maybe a couple of people in our audience would like to know another word.
Uh-huh.
And ubiquitous is something that...
I want everybody to form a sentence today. I want you to use that.
Right.
Use that in a sentence today, ubiquitous. You can impress your friends with ubiquitous. We'll all do that today.
Yeah.
Rufus probably does that every day, but the rest of us will do it.
All right.
All right. We'll talk a little more about plants and traveling and whatever else comes up here in WPTF Weekend Gardener, 919-860-9783.